This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. An automatic reduction to the Federal Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, or food stamps, will begin taking effect today, cutting benefits for more than 47 million people across the country. West Virginians rely heavily on this assistance program, with about 20% of the population enrolled. Ashton Mara brings us the story of a Kanawha County man who's already struggling to provide for his family and says this national cut means he will have to make even harder choices in the near future.
I don't eat a lot of times. I'll just make her food. I might eat what she don't eat, but yeah. In fact, I just did that this week, one day.
Rick Hodges is a single dad raising his 7-year-old daughter in Cabin Creek. Rick was a subcontractor for a cable company for 17 years, but was hurt on the job in 2001. Now, he relies on disability and food stamps to provide for his family. But this week, Rick received notice from the State Department of Health and Human Resources that his benefits were being cut from $79 to $59 a month.
That's $20 less food I can buy for my daughter. That's $20 that I'll have to come up with somehow out of my check. That means not paying the sewer bill, you know. Which if you don't pay the sewer bill, they want to cut your water off. So, you know, it really puts you in a bind. That's a large cut. That's a very large cut.
But he's not alone. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, nationwide will be cut by more than $5 billion today, affecting more than 14% of U.S. households. As a temporary boost from the 2009 federal stimulus package automatically expires. For West Virginia, that means the average family of three's benefits will be cut by $29 or 16 meals a month, based on numbers from the U.S. Agriculture Department. Executive Director of the Healthy Kids and Families Coalition, Stephen Smith, says about 350,000 working West Virginians will feel the impact firsthand.
Poverty doesn't look like someone who is not working and relying on government. Poverty looks like, especially in West Virginia, majority are people who are working, sometimes two or three jobs, and making minimum wage, which everyone knows isn't enough money to get by on. And those are a lot of the people who are receiving SNAP benefits to try to fill the gap at the end of every month.
In West Virginia, the program is funded exclusively through federal monies. SNAP senior policy specialist Marcia Stauer says the budget will shrink by nearly $3 million this month.
The ARRA itself was temporary. The ARRA is the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. And it increased SNAP benefits across the board in efforts to stimulate the economy. And the law was set to expire November 1st, 2013. So as of right now, the state doesn't have anything they're going to add.
Communities, however, are working to fill the gap left by federal funding. Smith says over the past few decades, as the economy has worsened, charities and food banks have started to step up to help families make ends meet. Even with the 40 to 50,000 new programs created across the country in the past few years, the number of people who are food insecure has only increased, showing that what they can do is not enough.
It is absolutely clear that those cannot fill the gap. And we've seen that in West Virginia. You talk to anyone who's running a backpack program or a feeding program, they see increasingly more and more, again, working families showing up, and they still aren't making the difference they need to.
Rick says he's had that experience, traveling from food bank to food bank in southern West Virginia just to make it through the month. As for what he thinks lawmakers should be doing when it comes to SNAP benefits,
I would tell them thanks for the stimulus that we did have, but there's going to be children that go hungry because of this cut, and they have to look themselves in the mirror, and they know that there are kids going to bed because of cuts that are going to be hungry and crying and sick for school the next morning.
Rick says the reduction in the program will be a challenge for him, but he isn't giving up.
I mean, no matter what they throw at us, we have to make it. I mean, we can't just blink our eyes and disappear from the world, you know. We have to somehow find a way.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
More research into the water used in natural gas hydraulic fracturing is needed. That's according to a study by a Morgantown environmental consultant. Downstream Strategies discussed the results of a recent study during an online webinar this week. Glynis Board has more.
The study took a critical look at water use data provided by natural gas drillers over the past couple of years to the Department of Environmental Protection. Data operators are required to provide under the Horizontal Well Control Act of 2011. The study interprets that data as well as compares it to the data reported in Pennsylvania, where the gas industry is substantially more developed. The president of Morgantown-based environmental firm Downstream Strategies, Evan Hansen, began his explanation by showing an image of what once was a pit where waste fluid from a fractured hydraulic well used to be stored.
This is a waste pit that's located in West Virginia, and you'll notice that there's no waste in it. And that's because it was recently pumped dry before this photo was taken. And the liner, that plastic liner, is actually being removed. The reason is that in this case, the flowback fluid that was stored there was draining through cracks in the liner directly into the bedrock that underlies this pit and contaminating the drinking water aquifer.
Hansen explains that groundwater monitoring data was collected before, during, and after development of the site. The data confirms pollution levels increased in the drinking water. He says it's a cautionary tale that underscores the importance of diligent attention to water issues related to oil and gas development. Hansen says there are about 2,000 well sites in West Virginia and 9,000 in Pennsylvania. He says the average Marcellus well in West Virginia injects about 5 million gallons of water into wells as fracking fluid.
And by far, most of the water in West Virginia comes from surface water. It's that 81%. Plus some portion of the purchased water. That's water purchased, for example, from local water utilities.
Hansen found that 8% of the 5 million gallons that goes into each well comes back up, flowback. He says the DEP and the industry should be applauded for adopting new recycling practices, so about 75% of that flowback is now being reused. He says the remainder is disposed of in deep well injections.
So that's important because every gallon of water that comes from reuse rather than a freshwater withdrawal is protective of the environment.
Hansen adds that tracking this waste should continue to be a priority. West Virginia already sees 100 million gallons of wastewater each year, and Pennsylvania, across the border, sees nearly a billion gallons of waste each year. Hansen's report also indicates a need to improve data collection and reporting requirements. Hansen says one of his biggest concerns is that West Virginia law only requires operators to report flowback water. It's a different story in Pennsylvania, where flowback only accounts for 38% of reported waste.
In Pennsylvania, all types of waste are reported, which is where this data came from. And not only are all types reported, but the reporting occurs every 6 months into the future. So there's a good full accounting of waste generated from Marcellus operations in Pennsylvania. It's different in West Virginia, though.
Operators in West Virginia are required to submit data once a year, but according to Hansen's report, only about a third comply. And moreover, errors in the data submissions are common.
Roughly one-third of the data we found to be suspect, and we decided to eliminate it before we crunched our numbers because we wanted to make sure that the data we used for our analysis was self-consistent and reliable.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:42. Numerous individual schools in Cabell and Lincoln County are closed today due to weather-related power outages. Schools on a two-hour delay include Harrison, Marion, Monongalia, and Taylor counties. However, Taylor County has closed Anna Jarvis Elementary School this morning. The National Weather Service has issued a severe thunderstorm watch until 10 o'clock for portions of the northern mountains, Potomac Highlands, and eastern panhandle. A wind advisory until noon for the Potomac Highlands and the Eastern Panhandle. There is a major vehicle accident on southbound I-81 at mile marker 23 in the Eastern Panhandle this morning. Activated signs warn motorists that all lanes are closed in the area to expect delays and stopped traffic. There's also a minor vehicle accident this morning on I-77 southbound at mile marker 157.
Support for NPR comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org.
High school basketball powerhouse Huntington Prep tipped off its fifth season last night in Huntington. Clark Davis has more about a brewing dynasty and the man leading it all.
Rob Fulford grew up in Mullins, West Virginia, a town known for its basketball prowess to those involved with the sport around the state. It's home to the D'Antoni family and former Marshall great and current Los Angeles Lakers head coach Mike D'Antoni, and others like Jerome Anderson, who had a short stint in the NBA.
You're just coming from Mullins, it's different. You know, we're extremely competitive in everything we do. I mean, we can go on and on about just how competitive that town is and the county, really, but Mullins more so than the entire county. But
Fulford is the head coach for Huntington St. Joseph Prep. It's a prep basketball team that Fulford established at the private Catholic school located in downtown Huntington. In just the fifth season, the team is recognized on a national scale and spent much of last season ranked first in the nation. The team only plays a national schedule and doesn't compete with in-state schools. Fulford says the success is something he never expected when he decided pharmaceutical sales wasn't for him and coaching basketball was.
It's just the competitive nature of it. I always wanted to coach. You know, I was in pharmaceutical sales and made a ton of money, and I just hated the job. And so I got out of that and started coaching. I don't make any money, but I love it. And I think it's just my upbringing.
Fulford started at Mountain State Academy in Beckley, where he established a prep school. There, he was able to recruit basketball talent from around the country and world to Southern West Virginia. After 4 years there and dwindling opportunities, he decided things had to change. The next step was to move things to Huntington. In a new city, things have blossomed for Fulford and Huntington Prep, where stars like last year's number one overall recruit, Andrew Williams, have shined. Fulford says the biggest challenge in establishing the program hasn't been the national recognition. Getting recruits or getting the kids into reputable college programs. But it's the community's lack of interest or confusion about what the program is about.
I think it's gradually going away because I think they understand that the type of kids that we're getting, they're good kids, they're high character kids, they're great academic kids, and I think it's taken some time for people to grasp what the program is. Our involvement with St. Joe has helped with the community support.
Fulford thinks things may begin to change this season as they'll play more home games in the Huntington area. Over the first four seasons, they've played home games at a variety of gyms in the area that allowed for bigger crowds than St. Joseph's gym would allow. This year, he says they'll play some games in the small St. Joe gym and others at the Civic Arena downtown after establishing an agreement with Huntington Mayor Steve Williams. Fulford is excited to see if his team can live up to the expectations they've set for themselves over the past four seasons.
The expectations are obviously high, but I think people in the community and really even ourselves are anxious to see what this team will do and how they respond because they've heard it. I mean, that's all they've heard since they've arrived in Huntington is, you know, how do you compare to last year's team?
He says the ultimate goal is to be the best team in the country.
We had a really good team last year, and we were preseason number one in a few polls, and I think we'll be preseason, you know, 1 through 5 in some polls this year. And that's our ultimate goal, is to win a national championship and just to continue to, you know, bring in high character kids that, you know, make the state proud.
Wednesday night, Huntington Prep took care of Bluefield College's junior varsity team, 99-52. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
Lori McKenna performs If I Could Buy This Town on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
If I could buy this town, I'd keep it small and rough for third shift dreamers in high school love. I keep the Church of Christ. the Bud Light signs crackle while they're glowing. If I could buy this town, if I could buy one night, I wouldn't buy the one you'd think. I'd buy my one where my eyes seared up by the light above the kitchen sink. And you held me tight, and you begged me not to cry. If I could buy the sweetness of one kiss, that's the one I'd buy. If I could buy one night, all the money in the world could buy drop of real love, could it? And really shouldn't have, should it? If I could buy the stars, I'd polish them so. I could buy your pain. First I'd buy the great big sea, and I'd put that pain inside a box and bury it so deep. If I could buy you back the years you worked yourself to death, I would buy and waste your suffering until there wasn't any left.
Laurie McKenna with If I Could Buy This Town. You can hear this song again and more music on Mountain Stage Sunday afternoon at 2 here on West Virginia Public Radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.